Well, the fight song of the South is playing, so, well, the unofficial fight song. Well, one of our unofficial, I still think Dixie is our number one song. We play that on Fridays as we close out the week, but that right there is our cue to get this program going on a Tuesday across Dixie. And boy, for many of you, it's going to be a throwback to August. Going to be quite toasty in a large portion of the South today. I have fulfilled my promise to y'all. I may get a few crazy looks today, but I'm wearing seersucker. I got me a nice blue and white seersucker jacket on right now as we get ready to do a y'all show in the month of November. Heck yeah, why not? You know, I'm going to be in an area where it's 80 degrees today. Heck yeah, I've got seersucker on, and you should too. Let's all be proud that the South is an area that, yes, we have our cold streaks come through, and we have our ice, and we have our snow. Not often in most of the South. It's just kind of a thing that happens a couple of times a year. But for the most part, we live in an area where you can put on a pair of shorts, you can put on that seersucker, and you can do your thing. And isn't that a glorious, glorious thing? John Rawl is my name, and this is the Y'all Show. Good to be with you here on a Tuesday, election day around the country. What does that mean? Well, for some of you, it doesn't mean a dang thing, other than the fact that we're exactly 1 year away from the national election of 2024, election day of next year, which means it will be the day that people go to the polls and pick a new president. That is, if they haven't voted 2 months in advance or sent in their mail-in ballot. Election day, the big one, as Fred Sanford would say, is a year from now. But today, a couple of southern states are going to polls to pick governors. That would be the states of Kentucky and Mississippi. And then you've got, in Virginia, a big election there to determine control of the Virginia State Senate and the House of Delegates. That's on tap today. And there are municipal elections scattered throughout the region as well. We're going to get through all of that as we cover our Election Day 2023 right here on the Y'all Show. And we're going to have, of course, on our Wednesday show, all the recap of what went down on this day and the surprises. I mean, listening to some of the national shows already today, they're talking about the role of abortion. And I'm afraid it's going to have a big, big role. Even though Roe versus Wade being overturned in the Dobbs decision happened well over, I mean, it's getting close to a year and a half ago, the ripple effects are still going on. And I'm afraid that's going to be the driving force for a lot of, especially women, as they go to polls today in these state elections. I don't know why. I really don't, because this is not something, in my opinion, that affects that abortion shouldn't even really be that big of a deal today. But that's what the pundits are saying, and that's what women are going to go try to weigh in on this. I mean, if you think about what I just told you, in the state of Virginia, where they have a not even a governor's race today, it's simply for the control of the state house and the delegates there, the delegates in the state senate. I don't know exactly how they call it. They've got a little weird deal in Virginia when it comes to naming their bodies of government. But Virginia's not been even flirting with the idea of changing the abortion rules. So I don't know why it would be a big factor there. And moving to Kentucky, a very red state, it hasn't been a big national story. Bashir, to his credit, has not turned into an ultra-liberal as a governor. And so I don't think he'll lose, in my opinion, to Daniel Cameron on this election day. But I don't know how much Cameron's been pushing abortion himself. I really haven't heard much at all from Daniel Cameron. And then when you go to Mississippi, which is the state that the Dobbs case originated in, I don't think abortion is trying to be what Brandon Presley is all about in his effort to unseat Tate Reeves as governor of that state. Interesting, though, I need to find this before we get to our political discussion, which we're going to do later this hour. We're going to have our Southern Political Report. And I want to find out if there is a big-time challenger in Mississippi today, not for Tate Reeves, but for Lynn Fitch, the Attorney General of the state, because I do believe she's up for election statewide today, Election Day. And if you go back to the Supreme Court case of Dobbs, it was her office that was pushing that, and that ended up overturning Roe versus Wade. So if the abortion activists really got to, if they got together and pushed it, they could have a formidable opponent, at least well-funded opponent, going against Lynn Fitch today for Attorney General as a way to get back at her for pushing the Dobbs case before the Supreme Court. I haven't heard a word about that, but I'll try to dig it up. Again, we will have our Southern Political Report coming up later this hour. We also have here in this hour of the Y'all Show, the most fun cities in America. That's going to be a fun thing that we're going to cover as part of our Southern Cultural Spotlight. The fun cities of America and which of the southern states are in it. We got that plus more headlines, hour one. Hour two today of the Y'all Show. Want to make you stick around because we're going to have a Southern Book Showcase. Congratulations to Kent Woods' little girl. Britney Spears has the number one book in all of America. The Woman in Me is number one on the New York Times bestsellers list in the nonfiction category. And we have found a little feature that was recently posted, and that's going to be put up on a website called Momojo, and they've got really good info about this book and some of the revelations that you'll find in The Woman in Me. So some Britney Spears news that we'll pass along as part of our Southern Book Report, plus we'll tell you what other books Britney bested in the bestsellers list and what's going on in terms of the fiction books on the New York Times bestsellers list. We got book talk coming hour two, and we also have entertainment headlines packaged in hour number two today. And in that entertainment news, we'll tell you all about how a Black Panther stuntman was killed in a car crash in the Atlanta area, and sadly, several of his kids also perished in that terrible tragedy in Fulton County. We'll let you know that. Plus, Paramount Plus has got some new offerings, some new series that we'll discuss, and a Willie Nelson 90th birthday celebration coming on CBS. All that info will pass your way in the second hour of today's Y'all Show. Our final hour, a quick preview of that, our friend Jerry Short is dropping by, and ain't no telling what we're going to be talking about with Dr. Jerry Short. He's not really a doctor, but I just threw that title out there. He is a sergeant. Sergeant Short's going to be our way in our final hour. We'll have a good time with him, the Takapola storyteller. And we'll also, in our final hour, go to a Southern Food for Thought segment. And in that Southern Food for Thought for today, we're going to give you an article all about creative things to do with leftover Halloween candy. If you bought a lot of candy for the big so-called holiday last week, and it's lying around, we don't want you to have that lying around for the rats to come and invade your house. No, we got a bunch of creative things to do with leftover Halloween candy, and we'll be sharing that with you in our final hour of today's program. If you want to get involved with the Y'all Show, M-A-I-L, mail@y'all.com is the way to do it. mail@y'all.com, or if texting is an option for you, 615-208-4184, 615-208-4184. Those are the great ways, and I would say easy ways, for you to reach out and connect with us here at the show about the South. Again, going back to our original tease of headlines today, it is Election Day across the country, and for most areas, not much going on. Most states don't have anything going on, but there are some municipal elections in selected areas of the country. And if we look at the South specifically, the big kind of races to keep an eye on: Virginia, Kentucky, and Mississippi. Virginia, you've got a governor's race there that features Andy Beshear, the incumbent, the Democrat, in a very red state, trying to fight off Attorney General Daniel Cameron as Kentuckians go to the polls today to choose a new leader of that state. And I would say the odds-on favorite would be Beshear in that one, just my opinion. The odds-on favorite in the state of Mississippi today for Governor Tate Reeves. He is expected to win, but he's getting a lot of heat put on him by Elvis's second cousin. And that would be Brandon Presley, who had been a public service commissioner for the Northern District of the state of Mississippi and decided to run as a Democrat against Tate Reeves. And some of the numbers coming in out of the Magnolia State show that this is a competitive race. So keep your eye on Kentucky and Mississippi as the numbers come in throughout the evening. And we'll see if the incumbents hold on. And if they do, that means the Democrat holds on in Kentucky, the Republican holds on in Mississippi. But don't be surprised if this is a lot closer than you expect and maybe even an upset. Again, abortion is going to be, according to most experts, a major, major factor in the turnout. And in fact, I'm going to tell you, this is not a southern state, but abortion is going to get a lot of attention on this election day because in Ohio, there is a constitutional amendment on abortion on the ballot today as voters in that state are going to decide whether to amend the state constitution to protect access to abortion services. So, yes, abortion rights people have been pouring lots of money and effort into Ohio, and we'll find out just how big a deal it is in that Yankee state. But here in the South, again, all eyes on our southern states of Kentucky, as well as Mississippi, and in Virginia, where there is a potential change in the Virginia General Assembly, as control of both chambers of Virginia's state legislature is up for grabs. Republicans have a very small majority currently in the state house, but Democrats over in the state, I guess they call it the state Senate, the state delegates have a very small lead there, and you could see Republicans take control over both houses of government. The Democrats could end up taking control. All remains to be answered here on Election Day 2023, and we'll report all the final results when they come in on our Tuesday, or rather our Wednesday, y'all show. We got more headlines that we'll be jumping into as we go throughout the day. When we come back, though, we're going to take a break from political talk before we dive in it, before the hour is up, by the way. And we're going to give you a little dose of an article that was just posted that caught our attention here. It's what cities in the South, what cities in the country are considered to be the most fun cities. Is your city on the list? Well, we'll break it all down as we continue on with the fun of not just talking about fun cities, but what a fun part of the world we live in, the American South. Hang on, we'll be right back.
For a good time, I need a good time. Yeah, I've been working all week and I'm tired. I don't want to sleep and I want to have fun. It's time for a good time. Cash my check, clean my truck, put on my hat, forgot about work. Sun going down, head across town, pick up my baby and turn it around. Good time. Oh, I need a good time. I've been working all weekend, I'm tired, I don't want to sleep, and I want to have fun, time for a good time. Hey! About singing along, bossy for songs, rowdy friends all night long. Good time. Oh, we having a good time. Yeah, I've been working all week and I'm tired. And I don't want to sleep and I want to have fun. It's time for a good time.
It's good time here on the Y'all Show. Welcome back, John Rawl, and the program about the South with a little AJ to get us in the mood for a good time. How about in the mood for a fun time? And we welcome you back in for this segment that we've got courtesy of WalletHub.com. And they got an awesome article up, The Most Fun Cities in America. As financial writer for WalletHub, Adam McCann has penned this. And he's gone in and looked at Bureau of Labor Statistics across the country. And he reports that an average American spends over $3,500 on entertainment per year. I wonder what all that's for. Surely not for things that they should be not reporting here on this article. But yes, WalletHub with a very in-depth article, as they, according to their article, to help Americans find the cities with the greatest number and variety of fun and yet cost-effective options, WalletHub compared more than 180 American cities based on 65 key metrics. They range from fitness centers per capita to movie costs to average open hours for breweries. Yeah, I told you they had a pretty crazy way of figuring this stuff out. They always have that at WalletHub. But looking at this article, again, for the most fun cities in America, anybody want to take a guess at what city? It's not a southern city that ended up being number one with a score of 73, the second highest most fun city in America, only got a 63. That number one city would be Sin City, Las Vegas, the most fun city in America, according to WalletHub. Easily coming in at number one, as they were number one in the category for entertainment and recreation, and number one for nightlife and parties. They did come in at number 84 out of the, 180 American cities that were looked at in this finding. They came in 84th in the country for the cost. Not cheap to go to Vegas. Now, that's the number one city in all of the land. The second most fun city in America, according to WalletHub. It comes to us from the South, from Central Florida. It is Orlando, checking in at number two with a total score of 63. Orlando was third in the nation for entertainment and recreation. In the ranking of that, they finished second behind Vegas for nightlife and parties. And that's why they are number two. Orlando is the 60th most expensive option, or 60. I guess they do it on the cheapest. So it's cheaper to go to Orlando than Vegas, according to WalletHub. Just to the south of Orlando, Miami checks in at number three for most fun cities in America. Miami with an overall score of 55. Miami was 143 on the cost. It's extremely expensive to go hang out in Miami on a vacay. More southern cities coming in the top five. Atlanta checks in on the WalletHub breakdown of the most fun cities in the country for this year. Atlanta, number one in the country for entertainment and recreation. That's a tie with Vegas. Did you realize Atlanta had that many options for entertainment and recreation? They're coming in number one there in the ATL. Congratulations. I've had some fun times in the ATL. I bet you there's a good chance you have too. And Atlanta is very, very much a tourism destination. Atlanta is the 125th most affordable option in the country for having fun. Number five is Atlanta's rival in the South. That would be the Big Easy of New Orleans, as New Orleans checked in at number five overall. And the Crescent City also was number four in the country for nightlife and parties. Now, I would say they might even have Vegas beat on the nightlife. Yeah, you can go gamble in Vegas and have a good time, but man, you can gamble there a little bit in New Orleans, but what you can really do is gamble in the French Quarter. And you might even be gambling with your life in some cases if they haven't cleaned it up by now. San Fran checks in at number six. Austin, Texas. Weird Austin is the seventh most fun city in the country. And boy, they really do get a lot of tourism into Austin, and you can have fun if you go to the Lone Star State's capital city, as Austin is about midway through the listing of most affordable. They're right at 88. So might want to save your pennies when you go there. New York, by the way, comes in New York City at number 9 in the most fun cities in the country list. Chicago is at number 10. But Tampa is right there behind them at number 12, as Tampa comes in ranked number 8th in the land for entertainment and recreation options. So what a nice little corridor there on the section of Florida. What is that, Interstate 4 that connects Orlando and Tampa? And you know what's right smack dab in basically the middle of that interstate? A place called Disney World. So, yeah, you got a lot of fun going on in the Sunshine State. And in fact, Fort Lauderdale, just north of Miami, they have their own little fun going on there. And on the Wallet Hub list of most fun cities in America, the FL is at number 13. Also in this listing, the nation's capital is at number 17. I'm not sure what all kind of fun you can have in D.C., but of course they're on the list. Houston is number 18. Oh, yeah. Houston there with a overall rating of 46 in the Wallet Hub list of most fun cities in the country. You can go hang out at the Arch because St. Louis is the 19th most fun city in the country. And then kind of scanning through, you got Charleston, South Carolina coming in at number 23. That's pretty impressive for a little old holy city beating out a bunch of really big towns like Salt Lake City is 24th and San Antonio is 26th. Richmond, the capital of Virginia, checks in at number 27. Then you have, where's Nashville on this list? There it is, number 35. But Jacksonville, to their credit, Jacksonville is at number 33. I should have said Dallas, 32 on the most fun cities in America list from Wallet Hub. And I repeat, this is a breakdown of not just the entertainment options, but they look at the savings. I said one of the things they're considering is the number of breweries in your town. Maybe Nashville needs to crank up more breweries and get away from the goo-goo clusters. 35 is Nashville. St. Pete, Florida, is number 36. Knoxville, way to go, Knoxville. Knoxville, the 37th most fun city in America. And I'll wrap it up with I'll just do the top 50 towns overall that have southern towns in them. You got Louisville coming in at number 41 on the Wallet Hub listing of the most fun cities in the country. And at number 47, Raleigh, the capital of North Carolina, is one spot above the Queen City of North Carolina. Charlotte checks in at number 48. And those are all of your southern cities in the Southeast as they celebrate the Wallet Hub listing of most fun cities in America. And Memphis, by the way, they weren't in the top 50, so I'm not going to mention where they end up. You just need to go to WalletHub.com and see where your city, where it factored in. I can tell you, looking at their breakdown of 180 most fun cities, they've got just about every state represented in this thing. But, boy, the American West, y'all need to have some more fun out there. There's very few little dots in the West. We got a lot scattered here in the Southeast. I mean, let me quickly just kind of go through. Baton Rouge is on this listing at number 60. You got Birmingham, 54th. And then you got, Columbia SC, right around 90, it looks like. So, yeah, they got a nice variety of options. And check it out. Read for yourself and study up on the most fun cities in America that Wallet Hub has published. And when you get ready for your next vacay, you can certainly refer back to this article and consider some of the fun, affordable options. In fact, we love saving money. So let me break this thing down here real quick and brag on a few of our southern cities specifically for the cost factor. So the most affordable fun city in America to go to, even though they ended up only 95th in the country for overall, but the number one for cheap, for having a good time, but having a cheap good time, Amarillo, Texas. And right behind Amarillo was Durham, North Carolina, followed by Tulsa. Montgomery, Alabama was the fifth most affordable option. Oklahoma City was just behind them, Brownsville, Texas, and then Jackson, Mississippi was number 9 for most affordable options for having fun in America. So saving you money, but putting a smile on your face, that's what we're striving to do here on this Tuesday Y'all Show. When we come back, We're going to jump right back into some political news. The governor of Arkansas, Governor Sanders, has made some headlines in the last few hours. We'll tell you why, and then we'll give you more information as it is Election Day across Dixie and America, with a couple of states going to the polls to pick governors. All that info coming right up.
Daniel Boone cut his way into Kentucky. Indians call that place the dark and bloody ground. They opened up the wilderness with courage and celebrated with an old hoedown. I grew up in the shadow of the mountains where the creeks ran clear and the nine-pound hammer swang. Folks taught me to have pride in old Kentucky, and it wells inside me every time I sing. I hear the sound of horses' hooves, McCoy and Hatfield mountain feuds, and bluegrass music that's Kentucky thunder. I hear the rumble from the mines, Buckthorn Hall as the moon still shines, sweet Kentucky girls are still the wonder. Lord, and when I die, that's where I want to lie, until old Gabriel blows his final number, and it rolls across the skyline. Kentucky Thunder.
Oh, there's going to be some thunder in Kentucky if Daniel Cameron pulls off an Election Day surprise. We're back here on the Y'all Show wrapping up this first hour of our Southern conversation with a look at our Southern political report. It is Election Day, as it is a big day in Kentucky, and Ricky Skaggs would be proud. I wonder if he's got some kind of residency in the Bluegrass State to where he can head on up from Nashville and put his name on the ballot. I don't think so, but what a good song there. A definite proven winner there, Ricky Skaggs, bringing us back in from break with Kentucky Thunder from the self, well, that's the name of the album, from roughly 1990 on Epic Records. That's the same song, that's the same album that had Let It Be You, which was a big song for Ricky Skaggs. What, probably his last huge hit in country music came off of this Kentucky Thunder album.
Kentucky Thunder.
All right, let's get back into talking politics. Andy Beshear is the current governor of Kentucky. He is a Democrat, and he will be up for re-election today. Daniel Cameron, the attorney general for the state of Kentucky, is his Republican challenger. Now, that has to make, they say politics makes, you know, strange bedfellows. How about having the attorney general of the state openly challenge you for governor? And you're Andy Beshear. That probably makes for some strange meetings that they've had over the last year, knowing that they would likely be facing each other on this day in polls across the state of Kentucky. But Cameron is going to be a person that has an uphill climb as Beshear, and Democrats nationwide have a little bit more wind at their back, only because, as most experts say, because of the abortion issue. And is it going to be a major factor here today as people go to the poll? Is it going to be something that drives people out to vote for Democrats? Time will see. Today we'll see. We'll know a lot more. But Andy Beshear, Cameron, in the state of Kentucky. Now, Virginia is having a big election day today, and this, in most pundits' eyes, the elections of Virginia will be the most important test for both parties heading into 2024, as it is a harbinger, these elections in Virginia, oftentimes, for what happens in the national elections. For example, so after Trump won in 2016, in 2019, Virginians went to the polls and had the same election they've got today. And in that case, both houses of government went blue in the state of Virginia. Then Joe Biden gets elected president in 2020, and whenever Virginians went to the polls to pick a new governor, right at the start of 22, I think it was, they chose Glenn Youngkin, a Republican, to lead the state of Virginia as governor. Of course, Virginia only has a one-term governor, and then they have elections every 4 years. It's a long-standing deal they got in Virginia of not seeking re-election if you're the gov. And that's why, for example, you got both U.S. senators for Virginia, Warner and Tim Kaine, both have been former governors, Democratic governors of the state of Virginia. Youngkin, right now, not up for election today, but both bodies of Virginia's legislature up for grabs, one controlled by the Republicans, currently one by Democrats, narrowly, by the way. And we'll find out if Republicans can take over both houses of government in Richmond and then have a Republican governor. And if that happens, then you might start seeing abortion and some restrictions come in the Commonwealth, like they've been pushed through in many southern states since the Dobbs decision. So that's what's going on in Virginia. And then when you get to the state of Mississippi, you've got a governor's race today featuring Tate Reeves, the incumbent, who was a two-time lieutenant governor under Phil Bryant and was part of that ticket and won both elections alongside Bryant. And now he went from the lieutenant governor spot 4 years ago to being Mississippi's Republican governor, following in the footsteps of Bryant and Haley Barbour. And today, his opponent is going to be Democrat Brandon Presley from Nettleton, Mississippi, just outside of Tupelo. And I don't think Presley is going to make this too close. But look, the guy's Elvis's second cousin, okay? And so it's getting some national attention. And it's kind of odd that this comes out right when Priscilla Presley's got a new movie, as she's got that out today. And so we got Brandon Presley, Tate Reeves in the state of Mississippi. And we've told you about how in Mississippi, abortion is I don't think that's something Presley's been pushing too much in the race that he's got going up against Tate Reeves. But what about the Dobbs decision, specifically on Mississippi's attorney general? Lynn Fitch is the Republican attorney general, and she grew up partly in her life in Holly Springs in Marshall County, where she grew up there, then went on to the University of Mississippi and got her undergrad before getting her law degree. And she comes from a very good family. But she got a lot of attention because she and her office pushed for the Dobbs decision, which went before the Supreme Court, and it made Roe versus Wade go away. And now Lynn Fitch today will be up for re-election as Attorney General of the state of Mississippi. And her challenger is going to be for Attorney General Greta Martin. And I haven't heard a single thing about Greta Martin in the general election for Attorney General of Mississippi, but you would just have to think that the abortion rights people would have poured lots of money in to Mississippi for Greta Kemp Martin for Attorney General, because if you, as an abortion proponent, could unseat Lynn Fitch and her effort to overturn Roe versus Wade, now that would be something else. I went to Greta Kemp Martin's campaign page, and she's identified as the people's lawyer. Greta will fight for the rights of everyday Mississippians and stand up for the working people of this state. I don't see anything about abortion, though. Maybe, just maybe, she's not pushing it. She's a lawyer who's made a career in people-centered practice. I don't know where she is from, though. And let's see if I can't dig this up. Born and raised in Mississippi, and she is from Belmont. Belmont is a suburb of Red Bay, Alabama. So she is from Northeast Mississippi, where she grew up and lives. In fact, she grew up the daughter of a nurse and a police officer in Belmont, and then went on to college at the University of Mississippi, and then on to Mississippi College School of Law in the Jackson area. And now she lives in Jackson, the state capital, with her husband and a bunch of kids and dogs. So she's not pushing big time on her attorney general page all about abortion. So maybe nationwide, the national pundits kind of have not tried to seek revenge against Lynn Fitch. We'll find out. We'll see how close that election today for attorney general in Mississippi is. Let's talk about some national stuff real quick, okay? So we've got the five in Florida. There's going to be the next Republican debate, and they've now officially announced the five candidates that qualified for this debate, and a few names that have been in these debates before have failed. So those who've qualified for the Miami debate, Chris Christie, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, Tim Scott, and then President Trump, but he's likely to skip out. Who did not make it? North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. He fell short after he was in these other debates. So I would think his campaign may be wrapping up as a result of that. But the latest Republican debate, again, is going to be five wide, to steal a term out of NASCAR, when they get ready to have that. I think that's scheduled later this month. I don't have the exact date, but it's getting that stage smaller and smaller. Now, Trump's not expected to be there, as he has skipped out on the other debates. Trump's doing pretty good right now. I know he's in court, and I know he's pitching a fit and going up against this judge in New York City this week. But politically, DJT's doing good in the polls, at least. Did you hear about the New York Times poll? He's leading Biden in all of the major swing states, minus Wisconsin. Biden somehow is ahead of him by a couple of points. But Trump, in this, again, New York Times poll, doing well. Trump had a 52% support to Biden's 41 in, for example, Nevada. This is a state Trump has not won in either 2016 or 2020, but the New York Times Siena College poll shows that Trump has an 11-point lead in that state. Trump also is leading Biden in Georgia, 49-43. He's got a lead over Biden in the polls in the state of Arizona, as well as Michigan. So polling-wise, which, of course, Trump loves to talk about polls, he's doing really well right now. And imagine if he prevails in every one of these legal challenges he's got right now. Don't you think that's going to make him surge even more in polling and ultimately where it really matters, getting people to support him on election day if he's found innocent or acquitted or cases are thrown out? You know, he keeps pushing in this civil fraud trial that's going on in New York City this week, of which he was testifying on Monday there under oath, and it may be up there today, that this is all a fraud. I mean, basically, that's what he's, as the judge got onto him, making a political deal out of a legal deal. But that's what Trump does. And look, I think things are going pretty good for him right now, politically at least. And that only hurts those handful of candidates that are trying to get their moment in the sun to try to be the Republican choice. Some of them, going back to NASCAR, and I'm not the world's biggest NASCAR expert by any means, but they're, what do they call that? When you get behind a car, they're drafting. and they're just waiting their turn. They're just hanging out behind Trump, waiting for him to make that one little mistake or for him to be disqualified. And then they're going to go right past him and grab that checkered flag. I know that's what a certain former governor of South Carolina is trying to do. And DeSantis is, I think DeSantis is trying to win this thing because Trump gets kicked out. I really believe DeSantis thinks he can win it. But he better step up his game. He better start turning on his Richard Petty element if he's going to try to do that. And you know what? He's going to have a hard time doing that when he's got people like Sarah Sanders of Arkansas not joining in his club or his team. Going back to NASCAR talk, she on Monday officially endorsed Donald Trump in the presidential race for 2024. Now, this isn't totally a surprise since she worked in the White House with him as press secretary, but she had been mum. She hadn't really said much about Trump trying to get her own election behind her, her own realm as governor of Arkansas going. And I think she's done a fairly good job thus far. I would put her on a short list of potential VPs, even though I know she's a one term. She's in her first couple of months as governor of Arkansas. But they have, of course, a close connection. And with that Huckabee maiden name, I think Sarah Sanders is a person to be on the lookout for going forward. But she, on Monday, put her support into Trump. She planned to join Trump at a rally Wednesday in Florida. So she's going on the road to support Trump. As she said in a statement, "It's not a question between right versus left anymore. It's normal versus crazy. And President Biden and the left are doubling down on crazy. The time has come to return to the normal policies of the Trump era, which created a safer, stronger, and more prosperous America. And that's why I am proud to endorse Donald Trump for president." Again, they're going to be together in the Sunshine State Wednesday, the same day that Trump's rivals for the nomination have that third GOP presidential debate. There's your answer to the question of when those other folks, Ramaswamy, the Nikki Haley's, the Tim Scott's, as well as Chris Christie and Ron DeSantis, the five second-tier candidates all have their debate in Florida Wednesday, and that would be in Miami. And Trump's going to be somewhere hanging out, probably just down the road from Miami, having his own little get-together. And Sarah Sanders, the chief executive of the Natural State, is going to be there. I bet you her daddy, who's sort of a Florida resident, is going to be alongside too. And that's just icing on the cake, probably. But I haven't seen that officially announced anywhere, so I better not speak for Mike Huckabee's his schedule. But that is our Southern Political Report for this week of the Y'all Show. And we will mix in other political happenings going forward as we work our way to 1 year from right now, as this is Election Day 2023. And 1 year from now, it will be the big one, Election Day 24. That concludes our opening hour. We got more of the Y'all Show coming up. Hello, South Rons. Welcome into the show where we put Dixie on our mind. And we've got all the happenings of this region front and center and ready to tell you all about it here on this program powered by y'all.com. We encourage you to join in on the fun as we have our 24-hour, 7-day-a-week text line open, 615-208-4184. We also have the email address that you can connect to us here anytime, mail@yall.com. Easy ways for you to stay involved with the show that shakes up things in the South. We are the Y'all Show. In this second hour of today's program, more headlines coming in that we'll get to. Also, we've got our Southern Book Report, and it's going to be, well, you know what, baby, just hit me one more time. Britney Spears has the number one nonfiction book in the country, as she has just put out The Woman in Me. And the Kentwood kid is a grown woman now, and she's got the number one book. You know, she's gone from having a number one song, and she's got a number one book. I don't think she's done too well at the box office, so we need to fix that for the Louisiana lady. And then she's got the number one, you know, I guess the number one shake, if you will. Britney, hit me one more time there. And The Woman in Me, number one in America. We're going to go and tell you more about this new book and some of the drama that's featured in it. And also we've got a clip of a report. I tried to find an interview that Britney's done in support of this. And you know what I found when I went looking for it? I found a clip that's got some good reporter type stuff talking about Britney Spears. And I'm going to play that. I doubt I'll play this today, but what I did find in my research of Britney getting ready for this segment today, and about a week ago, maybe more like 2 weeks ago, she got pulled over by the California Highway Patrol for speeding. She was going roughly 15 miles over the speed limit, and they got the whole body cam footage they put out, the CHIPS people, CHP. And I watched that thing. It's about 20 minutes long. You know, you got a pretty pathetic life when you're sitting there watching YouTube videos of Britney Spears being pulled over in a traffic stop for speeding. Not anything more dramatic than that. And the guy, essentially the trooper, let her off, gave her a warning, but she needs to go show that she's got, I mean, she didn't have her license, and she didn't have a proof of insurance. And she was driving, I'm not a car person, but I'm going to guess that she was driving a Lamborghini or one of them other extremely fancy sports cars. And she was by herself, and she was very cooperative, and it was right in the middle of the daytime. She had her sunglasses on, and she was a good subject, I guess you would call her, when the officer pulled her over. She cooperated, but she didn't have her stuff together, and she had to call up her assistant to try to get them to text over information about her insurance and more. But the officer mentioned that this was the second time in recent memory that he's had to pull her over there for going over the speed limit. And Britney, this house where she lives, is northwest of L.A. As she lives, let me pull it up. The L.A. that I'm more familiar with is where Britney is really from, which is Louisiana. But Britney lives in the Thousand Oaks area of L.A. I don't even know if that's Los Angeles County. That's where she's hanging out these days. And she needs to slow it down in Thousand Oaks and wherever else she's going in her fancy sports car. I need to find out what that was. In fact, I was reading headlines. I didn't think it was worthy enough of talking about, but maybe I should have. Somebody stole. God, what was it? I need to pull that up while I'm thinking about it. In Memphis in the last day, somebody stole an extremely fancy sports car. And you got to have some nerve to steal a sports car that's like $200,000 roughly retail, because I doubt there's too many places that you can go drive that thing and not get attention, and feel comfortable that you're driving around not only in a stolen car, but a stolen extremely, extremely nice car. I'm going through the Memphis headlines. I knew this would be something that I probably should have brought up here. But, of course, Memphis, I think, might be the number one city in America for stolen cars. So why wouldn't they steal? It was a Lamborghini stolen outside of a Cooper Young business. It was a 2016 red Lamborghini Huracan. And some idiot has stolen this car in the last day in the Cooper Young area of Memphis. So if you see a red 2016 Lamborghini running around anywhere in America today, there's a dang good chance it could have been from Memphis, and somebody in Memphis is ready for you to help them out with a little tip of how to get their Lamborghini back in their possession. But Brittany, I'm pretty sure whatever fancy car she's driving is very, very much earned. She's worked hard. She's put up with a lot. I'm proud of Brittany. I really am. Brittany, if you're listening, give me a call. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. There you go. We got more Brittany news that we're going to be sharing with you as we, again, go through our book headlines of the day. And then, hey, we got more entertainment news to tell you about in this second hour of the Y'all Show. Before we wrap up this hour, sad news from Atlanta. As a stuntman for the movie Black Panther was killed in a car crash in Atlanta in the last couple of days. And unfortunately, many of his kids also perished in that tragic wreck in Atlanta. I'll give you that information. We also have in our entertainment news today, Paramount Plus is putting out some new series that you can stream, and we'll let you know what some of those are. Plus, Willie Nelson is going to have a 90th birthday bash on CBS, and we've got some info coming in on that. So we've got all that entertainment news forthcoming in this second hour of the Y'all Show. Let's pick up with a few of our news headlines of the day. And in our news headlines, we want to make sure that you know that, again, it is Election Day across the South. We've covered that pretty extensively thus far in our headlines of today, especially in our first hour. So go to the polls and vote. That's what I'm going to hammer here today. Go vote if you live in any of these states where there's some important elections going on. The Federal Bureau of Investigation has released info on 11 million criminal offenses that have been reported for the year 2022. And for this 2022 data that's been put forward, the data comes from over 13,000 law enforcement agencies that have covered more than 256 million American citizens. And so this is a pretty extensive data coming in from the FBI, their crime statistics for 2022. And this info shows that the national violent crime actually decreased by 1.7% compared to the year before, 2021. Murder and non-negligent manslaughter had a nationwide decrease of 6.1% in 2022. Also in 2022, the estimated number of offenses in the revised rape categories saw a 5.4% decrease. Aggravated assault decreased by 1.1% in 2022. And robbery had a 1.3% nationwide decrease in 2022. The hate crime statistics, I've got, see if I can get information on that. I think that number went up, but they're not. This breakdown here doesn't show me what exactly those were. So I'm going to skip past that. But yes, overall, according to the FBI for 2022, we've got a decline in violent crime, and I'm not going to question it. That's a very good thing to hear. Over the last, you know. We've had a rough go of it, especially since COVID, and to see that number decreasing, even if the numbers aren't complete, is a good thing to report on, and I'm glad to do it here on this edition of the Y'all Show. Now, we're a talk show here. We talk about the South, but today I'm going to give you information about a story coming to us out of Nashville. As Steven Crowder is a host of a show called Louder with Crowder that airs in the Metro Nashville area. And this talk show host is now in the news himself because he commented about the Covenant School shooting in Nashville and some documents that were supposedly hidden, but he evidently, on Louder with Crowder, has come out with photos and writings and notebooks related to the Covenant School shooting in Nashville, as Stephen Crowder claims that the photos and images he put out are images of the shooter's writings, the shooter that went in and killed six people earlier in 2023 at this Presbyterian school in the Green Hills section of Nashville. Now, local Nashville TV station WSMV has been working, according to their website, to confirm the legitimacy of the images that were leaked. Metro Nashville police say they are aware of the info, but they are not confirming the legitimacy of them at the current time. But I heard some of the things that were alleged to be in these notebooks from this guy, Stephen Crowder. And if true, this was a person, the shooter that went in to get revenge on privileged white people, it appears, if you go and if that proves to be true, what was reported on Monday. And she herself grew up in that same school, the shooter who ultimately was in the process of changing sexes or had changed sexes or something. She had a lot of issues, it appeared, and she took it out on this innocent school, Covenant, in Nashville. But today, police working with Stephen Crowder to find out what's going on with his releasing of images and images of photos of writings and the notebooks that the shooter of that Covenant school had. We'll keep you covered on all that. Speaking of Tennessee, this company here, O'Charley's, has been based in Nashville. Have you been to an O'Charley's lately? There's a darn good chance that you probably haven't, because they seem to be fading away. As at one time, O'Charley's was located in a bunch of southern states, just about all of them. O'Charley's has really struggled the last couple of years. In fact, there is now just one O'Charley's left in the entire state of Alabama. As a Birmingham location of O'Charley's, the one located in the Birmingham area of Fulton Road, 1709 Fulton Road, that location has just closed, and that only leaves one location in Decatur. And again, O'Charley's still based in Nashville, but a tough go of it. And I remember going to an O'Charley's 4 years ago, right when COVID started or just before. And it was in the Nashville area, so maybe that's why it was booming. But, man, it was great. And one of the reasons it was so dang great is that on Wednesdays at O'Charley's, at that time, and they may still be doing this, maybe this is why they're going out of business, you get a free dessert with an entree. And they had a pretty good pecan pie that they served up there at O'Charley's, and they even warmed it up for you, at least at the one in Franklin that I was dining at. And you know, another positive thing about my O'Charley's experience at that time, I didn't have to pay the bill. Somebody took me in to supper. That's always a good thing. But O'Charley's closing now in Birmingham, only the one in Decatur in North Alabama left. O'Charley's was founded by Charles Sonny Watkins in 1971. He started it on 21st Avenue South, just down from Vanderbilt. In fact, it's right across the street from Vandy. And he ran O'Charley's from 1971 to 84. And then he sold it to a man, David Wachtel, who had spent 23 years working at Shoney's. And at one time, O'Charley's was booming. There's a lot of restaurants, especially. And I hate to see our southern built and bred and just struggle and have a hard time. But unfortunately, Charlie's has been really, really struggling. And now only one, at least according to their website, left in just the state of Alabama. And I went to their website. You might want to go to an O'Charlie's soon if you're reminiscent of the old days, especially the days where you could go in and get a free dessert on Wednesday. Looking at their statistical information from this year, they've got less than 100 locations left in the country, and net income is way down. It's not looking good. You might want to think about putting your money elsewhere if you're thinking about investing in O'Charlie's anytime soon. And that wraps up our news headlines, y'all. Now that I've been talking about nice, warm pecan pie, I got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to take a break by talking about Britney Spears. It's our Southern Book Report. We got a breakdown of the top reads in America right now. And Britney is at number one with The Woman and Me. That's the number one nonfiction book. But you know what? She's got some more famous folks that are right up there next to her in the bestsellers list. And I'm going to tell you who all they are. Some, I would call them surprises. So if you're looking for some good reads, we got the breakdown right around the corner, and we're going to hear a little bit more about The Woman and Me and some of the good gossip that you can find in Britney's book. Plus, before this hour is in the books, we're going to give you a entertainment report. It's the show that's all about fun, y'all, and pecan pie, too.
There's only two types of people in the world, the ones that entertain and the ones that observe. One, baby, I put on a show kind of girl. Don't let the back seat, gotta be first. I'm like the ringleader, I call the shots. I'm like a firecracker, I make it hot. When I put on a show,
all right, from 2010's The Circus, that is Britney Spears, that came out on Sony right before Christmas 2010 from that album. And I would have to say that was a pretty catchy little tune, as you would expect from the Kentwood lady, Britney Spears. We're back here on The Y'all Show, and we're talking about Britney because, well, she's always fun to talk about, right? Especially when there's drama. But today, it's all positive for Britney Spears because she's got the number one book in the entire country. We knew this book would be coming out this time of year. And The Woman and Me is the top nonfiction book as we have our Southern Book Report to report on. And way to go, Miss Spears. What a great, great attribute to have songs like this circus out. And oops, I did it again, but to now have The Woman and Me, the number one New York Times best-selling book right now, as this Grammy Award-winning pop star in this book details her personal and professional experiences, including the years she spent under a conservatorship overseen by her father. And with that conservatorship, she probably couldn't write a book. But she's got out The Woman and Me. It's number one on the New York Times nonfiction category. I'm going to come back and tell you a little bit more about it. We've got some audio that we'll play as she did an interview, or it really wasn't an interview. You might hear her. You might even hear her sister, Jamie, in the clip that I'm going to have in a second here on the Y'all Show. But Britney with The Woman and Me, again, doing quite well. Number one. And I think it might stay there for a while. Now, the book that's at number two is David Grimes' Killers of the Flower Moon. That's a book that's currently in film form in the box offices of the country, and it's doing quite well. Number two, David Grand's Killers of the Flower Moon, the story of a murder spree in 1920s Oklahoma that targeted Osage Indians whose lands contained oil. And that controversy covered in this book that's number two in the nonfiction category of the New York Times bestsellers list. How about a new book out from McKay Coppins? And that's a book called Romney. McKay Coppins, with plenty of attention for himself. He's a name that's been out in political world for a number of years. But the staff writer at The Atlantic now profiles U.S. Senator Mitt Romney, and, you know, the guy that ran for president in 2012, lost to Obama, kind of quit running for president there for the last couple of weeks. The senator from Utah and former governor of Massachusetts, who kind of grew up a privileged kid, but ended up being a very successful businessman before running for president, and then lost to Obama in 2012, went and kissed Donald Trump's ring at Trump Tower during that 2012 election. That's why, frankly, I get tired of hearing Mitt Romney criticize Donald Trump. He went and kissed his ring at Trump Tower in 2012 to get Trump's okay to support Mitt Romney when Trump was just a civilian, not that important. But he felt like he needed to get Trump on his side because Trump was such a big celeb at the time. And then fast forward to 2016, Trump wins the presidency. And in those weeks of the transition from Obama to Trump, when Trump was trying to get his people set up for the new Trump administration, remember Mitt Romney goes to New York City, dines with Donald Trump, probably thinks that Trump's going to give him the Secretary of State gig. And Trump does not do that. Trump does not give Mitt Romney anything. So some bad blood there. And Mitt Romney has essentially since that time been off the Trump train. And at every moment, it seems, has gone out and done everything he can to bash Trump, to embarrass Trump, to cut Trump. Outside of running for president himself, that is, Mitt Romney, no friend of Donald Trump. And I'm sure he would say, well, I am out preserving democracy, unlike Donald J. Trump. That could be a legitimate claim. It could be, as I just said, he's got a lot of animosity. And I think a lot of that will be coming out in this new book that McKay Coppins has. And I really think Romney, who's already said he's not going to run for re-election in Utah in his next time to be up for re-election in the Beehive State, he lets out a lot of the animosity, I'm sure, with McKay Coppins in this new book that you can find. It's in that top five. Top five right now on the New York Times bestseller list, Mitt Romney. Now, he's not the only celeb showing up. Rachel Maddow, MSNBC host, she's got the number four New York Times bestselling book as her book Prequel is out. And in this book, the MSNBC host and co-author of Bagman, she details a campaign to overthrow the U.S. government and install authoritarian rule, not during the Trump years, but prior to and during the United States' involvement in World War II. I'm impressed that Rachel Maddow would have a book out called Prequel that's not tied into the current political scene. That book is number four. So we've already got Britney Spears at one, David Grand two, the Romney book comes in at number three, Rachel Maddow four. And you know what? There's room here for one more little, we'll call it one more celeb. John Stamos has authored a new book, and it's brand new this week, coming in at number 5 on the New York Times bestseller list. If you could have told me, if you would have told me, John Stamos, it's a memoir from the Full House, ER, and General Hospital actor. And I believe it's in this book that he details that he was sexually assaulted as a youngster. John Stamos, one of the nice guys of Hollywood, and he's got this new book out. If you would have told me, checking in at number 5 in the New York Times nonfiction bestsellers list. Now, moving over to the fiction category of the New York Times bestsellers list, John Grisham, you've been booted from the number 1 spot this week. As brand new, coming in at number 1 is Lee Child's book that she wrote with Andrew Child, The Secret, the 28th book in the Jack Reacher series. It's 1992, and Reacher looks into the cause of a string of mysterious deaths. It's The Secret, the latest, as I said, the 28th book in the Jack Reacher series from Lee Child, The Secret, number 1 in the fiction category this week. Number 2, it is the Arkansas/Mississippi/Virginian John Grisham and The Exchange. This is the follow-up to The Firm, and it's out, number 2, as it involves Mitch McDear and the world's largest law firm, the sequel to The Firm, The Exchange, from John Grisham, checking in at number 2 this week. Anna Huang, she's got a book, checking in at number 3, King of Greed, out this week. Also in the top 5 of the fiction category is The Fourth Wing from Rebecca Yarros. This thing's been, it has been on this list, well, half a year now. It seems longer. Every time I mention her name, I mention the longevity of Fourth Wing, but yeah, she's doing quite well. Rebecca Yarros and Fourth Wing out this week at number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list. And then the last book that's made the New York Times bestseller list in the world of fiction, it is Bonnie Garmus's Lessons in Chemistry. A scientist and single mother living in California in the 1960s becomes a star on a TV cooking show. That one also holding its own, in my opinion, and doing quite well book-wise with its potential, I would say potential stability. I mean, it's been, as we just said, up there quite a time. And wow, what a good selection from John Grisham there in the fiction category, to moving over to the nonfiction with John Stamos. And other nonfiction offerings coming in from people like the McKay Coppins Romney book. And then you got that number 1 book in the land, Britney Spears and The Woman and Me. And now back to Britney talk here as we conclude our breakdown of the top 5 in New York Times' fiction and nonfiction category. So I was looking for a hot new interview that Britney has done. You know what? And the hot singer herself has not necessarily, at least up until today, burn up a interview trail. She's been laying low, and maybe you can lay low when you got the number 1 book in the land. But The Woman in Me is number 1, and I found, courtesy of the YouTube page MS Mojo, Miss Mojo, a article that they put up in YouTube form, Britney Spears' memoir, Top 10 Shocking Reveals. So, I had to listen to this, make sure it wasn't too shocking. Let's go in and hear Miss Mojo's report on Britney Spears' new number 1 book, The Woman and Me, and what does she have to say about people like Justin Timberlake and Christina Aguilera and others? Let's find out, courtesy of Miss Mojo on YouTube.
Memoir, Britney writes that she first became aware of the movement while in a rehabilitation facility, which she claims her father forced her into. During her stay, a nurse showed her videos of passionate fans rallying behind her.
Showed her some images of women in Free Britney t-shirts and showing signs of support. And that meant a lot to Britney. I think it really helped her know that when she was feeling so alone, she actually wasn't that alone.
Britney reflected, quote, "I don't think people knew how much the hashtag Free Britney movement meant to me, especially in the beginning." In 2021, after the conservatorship ended, Britney expressed gratitude to the fans who had given her a voice when hers had been silenced.
Spears herself has thanked the Free Britney movement, saying, "Because of you guys and your constant resilience in freeing me from my conservatorship, my life is now in that direction."
Number 9. Dancing with That Python. Britney's 2001 VMAs performance was iconic, but behind the scenes, it was a different story. Britney previously shared her fear of snakes and the terror of having to perform with one. She revealed that while she was making pop culture history, the reptile was hissing and flicking its tongue near her face, making her fearful it might attack. So instead, she kept her head down and focused on performing. Her 2007 VMA performance took a different turn. She writes that a lot was going wrong behind the scenes, and to add to the chaos, she unexpectedly met her ex, Justin Timberlake, who was doing great. Despite everything, Britney says she gave her best to the performance. Unfortunately, it was brutally panned.
I just want more.
Number 8. Her acting career. In 2002, Britney played Lucy Wagner in Crossroads, a film that followed childhood friends embarking on a journey of self-discovery. She shared that she immersed herself in method acting, blurring the lines between reality and fiction.
I'm just trying to find the woman in me, yeah.
This intense approach left her uncertain about further pursuing acting, and she even turned down a role in the 2002 Oscar award-winning musical Chicago. Interestingly, Britney nearly reunited with her Mickey Mouse Club co-star Ryan Gosling after auditioning for The Notebook. According to casting director Matthew Barry, it was between her and Rachel McAdams. While she says she's relieved she didn't play the role, we can't help but wonder what it might have been like if she had.
I know I had to see you again because we never really finished things, not really.
Number 7. Her relationship with Jamie Lynn. Britney's strained relationship with her younger sister has made headlines, especially due to their very public clashes on social media.
Accusing Jamie Lynn of exploiting Britney for monetary gain and warning that publicly airing false or fantastical grievances is wrong, especially when designed to sell books.
Following the end of her conservatorship, Britney openly discussed the mistreatment she experienced from her family, including Jamie Lynn. In her book, she expressed feeling overshadowed by parents favoring Jamie Lynn despite her unkindness towards them. Despite this, Britney remained protective over her little sister. She also shared feeling betrayed when she sought help from her during her conservatorship. Jamie Lynn seemed to side with their father, telling her, quote, "There's nothing you can do about it, so stop fighting it."
Setup was infringing on Britney's rights.
You have to understand, since I was 17, she's been in the conservatorship for 13 years. I've never known anything different as an adult.
Despite the hurt, Britney says she's, quote, "working to feel more compassion for her sister."
And no matter what, I'm always going to look at her as like my big sister.
All right, that is a report again about Britney Spears and the top 10 shocking reveals. And I didn't even get to some of the top 5 yet. That comes to us from the YouTube channel MS Mojo and their report of this brand new Britney Spears memoir, The Woman in Me. And, yeah, you can go in there and read about that gigantic python that Britney wrapped around her neck when she did that MTV Video Music Awards, VMA, I guess is what they call that, back 20 years ago. And some of the other wild things that have happened in this lady's life. Britney Spears, Kentwood, Louisiana. I pulled off there a couple months ago to get some gas. And I really thought I'd see huge statues and huge signs saying, "We're the hometown of Britney Spears." At least I didn't see it. Of course, it was maybe 6 in the morning. And maybe I just didn't have my eyes open quite enough. But they got a lot to say there about her and Jamie and the whole family. Some of it may not be so good. And I don't know how much Britney talks about Louisiana in the new Woman in Me book. But Brittany, you should be nice to those folks. And as I said earlier in the program, I was watching YouTube getting ready for this segment, and I found some dashboard video footage of her being pulled over in the last couple of days out in California by a California Highway Patrolman. And Brittany was going about 15 miles over the speed limit in her fancy sports car. Officer was very nice, mentioned to her that he had recently stopped her before. The officer did not have starstruck eyes when he was dealing with her. He was very, very professional. And she was very, very professional, too. So maybe there's some maturity coming in from this Southern lady, Britney Spears, and it maybe comes through in a big way with the new read, The Woman and Me. It's the number one nonfiction book on the New York Times bestsellers list right now. Congratulations. And we hope you enjoyed this Britney Spears conversation on this Tuesday Y'all Show. Now, we're not done talking about the big stars. When we come back after this break here on the Y'all Show, I'm going to tell you about a Willie Nelson. He's a pretty big star, too. I don't want to see him shake his derriere anytime soon. But Willie has his 90th birthday, and CBS is going to do a broadcast about Willie's 90th birthday, and I'll give you the details on that. Also, some other entertainment headlines that you need to be aware of, included in that, a tragedy in the world of the movie Black Panther. I'll give you that info after this break here on The Y'all Show.
Someone's gonna get hurt before you're through. Someone's gonna pay for the things you do. How many hearts must break? How many is it gonna take to satisfy you? Just to satisfy you. Another love, another fool to play you. Another love, another fool, they're all the same. Someone's gonna get hurt before you're through. Someone's gonna pay for the things you do. You're gonna find when it's too late, a heart just won't break. Just to satisfy you, just to satisfy you.
The one and only Willie Nelson teamed up with his good pal Waylon with a great 1980s hit, Just to Satisfy You. And if you're a fan of the Texas kid Willie, well, guess what? We got some great news for you as Willie Nelson's 90th birthday celebration, a concert special honoring the legendary career of Willie Nelson. That's going to be airing in just over a month on CBS. And it also will be streaming on Paramount Plus as the Willie Nelson 90th birthday celebration comes to TV on Sunday, December 17th. The perfect Christmas gift, all about Willie Nelson. Willie actually celebrated his 90th birthday. I think it was, he's got either a March or April birthday, and he turned the big 90. And boy, this is going to have an incredible lineup with a bunch of people like Sheryl Crow, Snoop Dogg's on this 90th birthday celebration, Miranda Lambert, Dave Matthews, Willie's sons Lucas and Micah, also Keith Richards, George Strait, Jennifer Garner, Chris Stapleton, and more. The Willie Nelson 90th birthday celebration coming up on Sunday, December 17th on CBS. Other headlines in the entertainment world to tell you about. Sadly, a member of the Black Panther movie cast, not necessarily an actor, but a stuntman for that incredible movie, Taraha Ramses, died in the Atlanta area with three of his children also perishing in this crash as he, again, was a stuntman. The stuntman was 41 years old. Atlanta TV station WSB-TV reported that the crash occurred before midnight on Halloween, after the vehicle that Ramses was driving and his children were traveling in. It collided with a tractor trailer that had broken down in the left lane of an exit off the interstate. And unfortunately, this stuntman was killed along with two of his children, 13-year-old Sundari and an 8-week-old newborn daughter named Fujibo, all killed in this horrible wreck in Atlanta on Halloween. The Black Panther stuntman Tarot Ja Ramses dies with three of his children in a car crash in Atlanta, Georgia last week. Our thoughts go out to that family. Other headlines. Priscilla Presley reveals why she never remarried after Elvis Presley. You can go to CNN.com and read this story, but one quote she said of her late ex-husband, "I don't think that he could handle that, remarrying, especially when he was alive." That's a fantastic interview you can see there at CNN. And remember, the new movie out called Priscilla is available for you to see in movie theaters right now. Also want to let you know that Paramount Plus is going to have some new series like Lawmen Bass Reeves. I can't wait to see that. It's got a kind of a Civil War connection. It's going to be streaming again. You can check that out on Paramount Plus and other platforms. A bunch of new series coming forth. In fact, you got a Dennis Quaid. I think it's Dennis Quaid stars in this Lawmen Bass Reeves. Also other neat series coming forward. Those are some of our entertainment headlines to help wrap up our second hour of the Y'all Show. Stay tuned. More of the show about the South coming up. It's the final hour on this Tuesday, Election Day around the country. John Rawl is my name, and welcome into the Y'all Show as we are available not only on awesome radio affiliates across Dixie, but check us out in podcast form, Spotify, iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, plus Apple iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and y'all.com, the South's homepage, y'all.com. It's a free podcast. You can listen to it when you want to listen to it, and you can share it and tell everybody about it and catch up with all the episodes that we've done of the show that shakes the Southland each and every day. We are the Y'all Show. Hope y'all are doing well. We got an awesome hour ahead of this program. We got the Takapola Storyteller. He's going to be dropping by with a report in just a few moments, as well as later in the hour, we've got Southern Food for Thought. And since we're now 1 week exactly from when Halloween was held, we've got an article that we found on the website delish.com, and it is 42 creative things to do with your leftover Halloween candy. If you haven't eaten it all and it's going to sit there and maybe attract rodents like roaches or maybe even something like a rat, don't want that. We've got a great article to help you out as you try to put away the Halloween blues. That's coming up as part of our Southern Food for Thought later this hour. We also have headlines to get to. Want to remind you that we want you to be part of the Y'all Show. The way to do that is to reach out via email, mail@y'all.com. Also, we have our text lines open, 615-208-4184. We'd love to hear from you here on the program. So let's dive in again, as it is Election Day. Let's dive into a handful of news items before we switch over to our Takapola kid, Jerry Shortis. He'll be on in a handful of minutes to give us a update on what's on the tap, what's on tap in Takapola, USA. Election Day, Virginia votes for their House of Delegates and their also representatives here today. You've got in the state of Kentucky a governor's election and other key offices in the Commonwealth, and then in the state of Mississippi, in addition to the Attorney General and Lieutenant Governor. It is a governor's race between incumbent Tate Reeves and Brandon Presley. We'll have all of the big details of Election Day 2023 that we'll pass along to you on our Wednesday show. We should have all the final results in, and we'll pass them on to you. A little sneezy for you here on the yard. Yeah, it was my friend's cat. Now that I mentioned that word sneezy, that's my friend's beloved cat forever was named Sneezy. So Sneezy, thinking about you here as I just had a little sneeze. All right, let's tell you before I put you into a little snooze about Heinz. Heinz is going to release a new pickle ketchup. Just what you've always wanted. Pickle ketchup, the latest condiment innovation from Heinz. Going to make a nationwide debut next year. It's the condiment from Kraft Heinz Company that combines the tangy and savory flavor of pickles with the taste of Heinz ketchup. If you like, we told you a bunch about pickles on Monday's Y'all Show, and here we go telling you about pickles. According to October 2023 Data Central report that Heinz is putting out as part of their news release on this new form of pickle ketchup, according to this data, 73% of American consumers reported that they enjoy the taste of a pickled cucumber. And Heinz is going to capitalize on that, putting out this new pickle ketchup. And over the last few years, you might have seen at the grocery store various forms of ketchup from Heinz. They've got mayo chup, and they also have Cranch, mayo must, and sweet ket chili as offerings of some of their sauce combinations that they put out over the last few years. And for you pickle lovers, next year, get ready for Heinz to have pickle ketchup on the grocery store shelf for you to take home to the loved ones and make their day, since three-fourths of the country love them some pickled cucumbers, and now they can have a pickled cucumber ketchup. I bet that would be really good on a hot dog. I had me a couple dogs on Monday, and I'm here. I'm alive to tell you about it, so they must have been good. All right, that wraps up our news headlines here for the final hour on this Tuesday Y'all Show. When we come back, we're going to go to Takapola Land and visit with Jerry Short. What in the world he's got going on today? Heck if I know. But you know what? We're always due for a great conversation with our guy, and we'll have that right after this break. It's the Y'all Show, powered by y'all.com. Welcome back. It's the Y'all Show, shaking the Southland with awesome stuff. And part of the awesomeness of the Y'all Show is when Tuesdays, the Takapola storyteller, Jerry Short, drops by for a conversation. Jerry, we are glad to have you back on the Y'all Show. And boy, you're looking nice.
Boy, it must be Tuesday.
It is Tuesday.
You've been mighty complimentary.
All dressed up for us.
You've been mighty complimentary.
And that's what I want to talk to you about, Jerry.
All right.
Fashion, you know, that's something we don't talk about.
Did you say passion?
Fashion.
Oh,
a passion for fashion.
Fashion for fashion.
No, passion for fashion.
Okay, fashion.
Fashion.
Yeah, right.
So tell me, in your world, the meaning of looking nice and how important it is in certain occasions.
Well, you know, this everybody's gotten really casual this day and time, and you know, I don't feel like that the gentleman that from Pennsylvania that was a representative, or no, he's senator, as a matter of fact.
I thought you were about Joe Biden for a second.
No, well,
he's about Fetterman?
Fetterman, yes, Mr. Fetterman. And
Senator Fetterman.
I wouldn't consider him fashionable, but he has, I think he has been kind of forced to get a little fashionable. And seems like it may have helped his political views also. But what I think about fashion is, you know, there's a place and time for any kind of fashion. And, you know, my daughter and granddaughter and everybody that goes to a wedding or a wedding, you know, tuxedos and, maids of honors and groomsmen. You know, groomsmen should definitely, I think, have tuxedos. And then it comes down, if you're not going to have an elaborate wedding, I think you should have a suit and tie on. You know, in my day, at 10 years old, I wore a suit and tie to every church service I went to, from because I'd wear it in the morning to go to Sunday school, then I'd wear it to church.
And we're not talking about sport coat.
No,
and,
we're talking
and pants.
About
we're talking
regular
about
suit and tie. And like, it took me forever to learn how to make a really good tie. You know, my granddaddy had to teach me how to tie my tie properly. But you know, at first your mother would probably tie your tie for you, and then you would go on, you know. But you'd dress you up. You know, you wouldn't be like little Roy Fortinoid. You wouldn't be like him with knickers
Who's
on.
Who's that?
Oh, that's from the old days, Lauren Hardy type days.
Okay.
When kids had to dress like that with knickers and stuff.
Yeah.
And, but I don't, I think all that's outdated and gone. As everything evolves into something else, this day and time, I think you can look casual enough with I still prefer a white shirt with a blazer, a dark colored blazer.
Navy or black?
They can be almost similar up, you know, from a distance that you can't tell the difference. I don't like a real light, I like a darker navy, and I like a black suit coat. And then I think it's okay with khakis, and then, of course, you can wear suit pants also, but I prefer khakis with a good belt and a good belt buckle. And, of course, in the older days, we all had cufflinks, and you had to wear that sort of thing.
People really went out of their way back in the 50s and 60s, mostly
50s. I mean, you go to a college football game, and every gentleman there was dressed in a suit.
Not a sport coat.
No.
Not casual, not business casual.
Just the same thing he would wear in church on Sunday. You would think he was ready for church on Sunday.
Not in school colors.
Not in school colors, no. You know, they didn't even hardly sell those items then, you know, so – nobody ran around, and they didn't have, today, you know, if you're an LSU fan, it's purple out or it's gold out, or, you know, people didn't have those colors to put on, you know. So my thought of a fashion would be kind of halfway in between, because I think a man still needs to be comfortable. You know, Representative Jordan, if you notice, he always carries his
Jim
sports
Jordan
coat.
Of Jim Ohio, Jordan. The guy that just missed out on the speaker.
The guy just missed out on the speaker. And he was a professional, wasn't a professional, he may have been, but he was a college NCAA wrestling champion twice. And I think he coached wrestling at the University of Wisconsin. But I don't know if that's why, you know, he's got broad shoulders. He's a tough-looking guy, but he's a nice-looking man. And he carries his jacket, usually, with a long sleeve, nice shirt. And it's not necessarily always one color or white. It can just be a nice pressed shirt that obviously came from the cleaners. And, you know, I think you should have, when you really dress up, your stuff needs to be put in the dry cleaners and pressed to a level that it looks pressed. Not something that you just knocked out on your ironing board with a little water and a little spray starch. I think it needs to be a more of a stiff look. You know, and because if you're going to have a jacket on, that collar don't need to be flopping around. It needs to be, you know, more erect and standing out. And
on the suit,
even on just a jacket.
Okay,
not necessarily a tie. You know, I'm not much on ties anymore. You know, if I was out west and could wear one of those Indian-looking...
Bolo ties?
Yeah, if you could do that, it'd be okay. But no no bow tie. You know.
Oh, really? That's no. What I like to wear sometimes.
Well, I mean, it's okay, but not...
What do you think about a bow tie on a guy? And be honest.
Well, I'll be honest. And I think a bow tie on a man, there's a time and a place. And if it's a... if you're at an event that pertains to something historical or something more 30, 40, 50 years ago, a bow tie looks pretty good because a bow tie was a good item to have in those days. And bringing it forward, if you're at an event that pertains to that day and time in history, I think it looks really good. It's classy, you know. It's kind of like... wearing a striped shirt or a, you know how Southerners used to wear, I think I've seen you wear the.
Seersucker?
Yeah, I think I've seen you wear
it. Oh, I've got seven,
yeah,
maybe eight seersucker suits.
And they look good. They really look good on people. And they look, it looks nice on you. And they really look good at a event that calls for that. You know, something, it's more Southern, a seersucker seems to be more Southern and more classy.
Oh, yeah, that's why, you know? I wear it, because yeah. You know, Jerry, you may not realize this, but I kind of fancy myself as a Southerner.
Yeah. Well, I kind of realize that. And, you know, y'all kind of goes with Southern.
Yeah, a little bit.
And
but you've never owned a seersucker suit.
Oh, yeah. I've had a seersucker.
You know where they originated here originally. In the South.
Yeah, they originated in
but
the
where
South.
Specifically?
Well, since you're from South Carolina,
no,
that's
no,
question.
No, no, it's not from there. It's a place called New Orleans, a place called Perlis.
Oh, okay.
Are you familiar with Perlis?
Yeah, I know, down just off a canal.
Got the logo of the little crawfish.
Yeah, just off a canal. And that would have been pre-Civil War days.
I think it was more of a after Civil War. And seersucker as a fabric actually originates from India.
Yeah, it's a different fabric, and you can really tell it when you take your fingers and kind of rub them between it. And it's not smooth like cotton or polyester or anything like that.
I like it. I wear seersucker beyond the so-called official season of seersucker, Easter to Labor Day. Sometimes you'll catch me. Heck, last year I wore it in December. And, you know, I think I might do it again this year because
true.
I can.
I know. That's
but,
true.
But, you know, people like me, Jerry, bucking the trends and sometimes doing the rebellious things out there. What do you think of that when you see somebody, a lot of men, I know a guy who wears shorts year-round.
Yeah.
It could be 20 degrees, and he's still wearing shorts. What do you think of those kind of crazy things?
I think it's tacky.
Okay. And, tell me how you feel.
Yeah, I do. I think it's tacky, and I think there's no place for it. And you know, I know his legs have got to be cold if they're in some of the places I've been. When I've got regular pants on, and it's still cold. And there comes a guy with shorts on. And I think... You know, football coaches, they're trying to be more casual now. And Johnny Vaught and Bear Bryant and all the people from way back, Tennessee, General Neyland and all that, they wore suits, always wore suits. And coaching staff would wear suits. And I think they still need to dress up.
I think colleges – should at least have their coach dress up nice for homecoming.
I do too.
When they have their homecoming. It's kind of a salute to the past. That's what I would do.
Well, it ought to be a salute to the present that we're still got class and we're still not trying to dang follow someone. Let's be ourselves. Let's be what made us. Let's be what we were. You know, like I said, now I'm getting away from wearing a tie as little as possible because wearing a tie sometimes can be really unhandy and inconvenient and uncomfortable.
But boy, it looks good.
It looks good, but it can be uncomfortable. And if you're going to an event where you're going to be moving around a lot or you're going to be stationary even for a long period of time, I think you need to be comfortable. And I think you need to be, you know, you can be classy, you can be stylish, and without going overboard. You know, there's always a limit to everything. And I think it fits that purpose.
We were talking about football. We were talking about dressing up a little bit. Shout out to Will Hall. Are you familiar with Coach Hall?
No, I think it's Southern Mississippi.
He is the Southern Miss Golden Eagles head coach, and not every single game, but a lot of games he wears a tie on the sideline.
Yeah.
And there's very, very few coaches at all at any level that wear ties on game days. Shout out to Coach Hall.
Yeah, or at least bring
Southern Miss to the top, baby.
Bringing it back and, you know, win, lose, or draw. And I think they lose more than they win at Southern Miss. But he's still a class act.
I think so. You know? And he may be part of that, the old Ohio State coach, Jim Tresville or whatever his name was.
Yeah, he does. He wears it.
He wore that little tie, little vest thing a lot. And I think a lot of his disciples carried that tradition over. I'd like to see ties a little bit more, if possible, on football sidelines. Even basketball coaches have gotten away since COVID.
They
used to be the most decked out of all.
You know, they'd take that coat off, and you'd see him when he got it. The game got tight and got close. They may be sitting on that bench with that dang suit on, that suit tie. But here comes that suit tie off, and it drapes it over that chair, you know, and because it's getting into a situation where, hey, I got to come out there, and I got to move my hands, and I got to do this. So they'll take that coat off, but it does. It, you know, it hadn't been long ago that most basketball
coaches. Oh, it was COVID.
Wore it.
When COVID started, these coaches just kind of wore golf shirts and stuff.
Yeah, they get away with it then.
But they kept that going. So there's a lot of men's clothing stores that want those college coaches to bring, and NBA too.
I was involved in one time, and Coach Higgins, who was at Cincinnati
Huggins.
At the time. Is it Huggins?
Yeah.
Got
fired a couple months ago.
Where was he at?
He was at West Virginia.
Yeah,
his alma mater.
Cincinnati, and that's his alma mater.
And he got busted for another DUI and had to step aside.
Well, he was down on a recruiting trip in Mississippi one time, and he went by a clothing store next to Oxford, and they sold suits. And he ordered all his suits from that clothing store and had them mailed to him, because I was at a NCAA game one time and introduced him to the owner of the store. The owner of the store told me he knew him, and I introduced him. He said, no, I don't know him personally, but I ordered my suits from him. So, you know, that was a thing, and that hadn't been that long ago.
No. Again, the importance of looking good. We're talking to Jerry Short, the Takapola storyteller here on this Tuesday Y'all Show. So let's move over, if you will. Jerry, something that's easy for you and I to talk about, men's clothing. Let's talk about women's clothing. You've raised a daughter.
Yeah.
You've been, like me, you got a couple of women in the past that you've been married to, some of which may have enjoyed having you buy them clothes in the past.
Right. Yeah.
what is the Jerry Short definition of a really well-dressed woman? What do you like to see?
You know, every girl in my family has been in the Greek world, and they've all been sororities, and they've all been major sororities, and they've been at the sorority capital of the world. I noticed it's considered to be the number one sorority college.
Okay.
And they dress.
Maybe because of how much they spend on clothes.
Well, that's where I was going. The first time that I noticed that, my daughter was a sorority rush chairman at this college in her sorority. And every ball game, she would tell me, Daddy, I need another dress. Maybe the third or fourth game, I'd say, didn't I buy you a dress for game two? What's wrong with it? Oh, I can't wear the same dress every game. You know, I had to have a different dress every game they went to. So I'd end up buying 10 dresses if she went to 10 games that year, you know.
That's ridiculous.
And they were high dollar stuff. It wasn't cheap stuff. Now, today I notice, you know, the hemlines are always changing. The type dresses are always changing. Today I think they may wear those hemlines a little too tall. I prefer them to go on back down about couple of inches above the knee.
Man, come on.
Yeah, that's what I think would be look better and more proper at especially at a ball game. I mean, you're sitting in the stands, you're in the bleachers, and you're jumping around, and a lot of people don't like these schools that still continue to bring the past and wear it and dress up. The girls dress up.
Yeah.
They don't like those. They kind of look down on them because they've gotten into those sweatshirts. It might be the color of the school. They might have a white out, brown out, black out day, and they set in their chair numbers, kind of like Southern Cal used to give them flashcards, and they'd give them the number to flash them, and they'd spell out across the area. Now you just sit there in that color outfit.
Hmm.
But I think they need to wear a one-piece dress, preferably to me, a girl does. I don't think it needs to be a two-piece with a short skirt I notice they've got this plaid skirt they wear now. My granddaughters are in the Greek world at this college.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And and it keeps you worried what they wear, too, since you brought up women's clothes.
Well, I brought it up because it's a big deal. In fact, there was another college that competes with your family's choice of colleges for that title of number one Greek world. This one may be a little bit more famous because they actually have a TV series about it. It's the Capstone, the University of Alabama. And on a recent episode of whatever that TV show is, one of the young ladies who's going through Rush this year or something, she spent over $20,000, this college freshman, she spent over $20,000 on one outfit. Mm. Now, that includes the dress, but a lot of the expense was on jewelry.
Right.
So tell me about jewelry with the fashion and all that.
You know, the earrings are fine. A good watch is fine. Just don't go overboard on the fingers with rings and stuff like that. Because you're talking about the one at this Capstone that spent...
That'd be Alabama, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
The machine.
It'd been $20,000, you said.
Over 20.
Well, I thought this was
just for one outfit.
I had a daughter in this college that my daughter went to. And she didn't just shop at one store. But I happened to be in that one store, which was in an adjacent town to the college. And the guy introduced me to a student from, he was a father of a person at that university. He said, you know Jerry, don't you? And he said, no, I don't believe I do. And he said, well, his daughter spends $10,000 a year with me. Well, I didn't have any clue. You know, and this is 1990, 91, 92. I'm spending $10,000 a year.
And you didn't even know it?
I didn't know it because I would write the check and I'd pay him and I wasn't paying any attention. And
must be nice.
I went home. Well, it was better than not being able to pay him, I guess, because I'd be in jail.
How would you like to do that today? Just write checks?
Couldn't do it today. And so I went home, and I got my checkbook out, and I tracked it down, and I told my daughter to the next game after she asked for it. I said, you know, you're a senior now. Do you know how lucky you are that I was told by the guy that had been selling you dresses at his place that I had spent $10,000 a year there? And I said, if you were a freshman and I'd found that out, your dress wear would have been cut in half, dear. You know, and I said it in a very nice way, and I think she understood it, but she didn't understand that, hey, you know, you give an inch, you take a mile, anybody will. And so that's what was happening to me financially in dress wear for female Greek world people.
We're talking to the Takapola Storyteller. It's Jerry Short here on the Y'all Show. If you've got a fashion suggestion and or a tip here for the Y'all Show, you just feel free to reach out to us here on the various ways to contact the Y'all Show. One easy way is to email us, mail@y'all.com. That's a very simple 24/7 type way to contact us here on the program, All About the South. Jerry, what is your opinion of women in hats?
Women in hats. Well, obviously that is just about gone with the wind, and to use a Southern term. But you don't see very much of that anymore. I thought at the time it was real fashionable. You know, you could always overdo it. But ladies always wore hats to church, older ladies especially, because it probably comes even back further back than the 50s and 60s. It goes back to the 30s and 40s if you ever watch any old black and white movies. But to be real fashionable, you know, I ran into a woman that was a former majorette at this university the other day, and she was wearing like a beret, a beanie type thing, which looked okay. But, you know, it wouldn't be expensive. It wasn't real elaborate. It was just on top of her head as a beanie, and then her hair come around behind it, you know. I'd call it a beret or beret. You know, whatever you want to refer to it as.
Well, she was wearing it, and it was not even wintertime.
No, it wasn't wintertime. She was just dressed that way. Well, it hadn't been a couple of weeks ago. Okay. And she was just dressed that way for the occasion. And she was just a regular day in a regular restaurant. We weren't in a real fancy restaurant, you know. But that was her wear. Now she's a kind of an elaborate lady that is not from the town that this happened in.
Old girlfriend of yours?
I don't know if she'd be a girlfriend or not, but I'm acquaintance with her. Okay. But she is in Washington, D.C. today.
Oh.
So I guess they may wear that beret in. I told her about it. I said, you know, I had to look. I couldn't tell. And then I kept looking at that beret you got on your head. And then I said, finally, you got a profile.
She could have been a Girl Scout.
Might have been. I don't know. You know, Girl Scouts are doing pretty good this day and time.
Good for them. Hey, I do give credit to a country music starlet right now that's the number one singer in country music, really. She truly is. She's got the song that's been number one for a couple of weeks, Watermelon Moonshine. She is out of Baskin, Louisiana. Her name is Lainey Wilson. And Lainey is, I give her credit, I see more and more women wearing a kind of a cowboy hat, but it's a little bit more of a cross between a cowboy hat and a Crocodile Dundee type hat. And Lainey likes to wear those hats. And I do believe she's helping bring a little bit more of the she's also appearing on Yellowstone, which is a very popular
TV. I've never watched that.
But that's now on network TV. Yeah, CBS is carrying it.
I don't prefer the gentleman that plays the role.
But Mr. Costner?
Yeah, he's donates to the liberal side of my situation.
Well, I might be donating to him.
He's a Cheney fan.
So you don't know that.
I've heard him say he's a big Cheney, Liz Cheney fan.
I love it.
So, you know, they film that in that area.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't watch it.
Anyway, besides Kevin Costner, Lainey Wilson, who's been on that last series of Yellowstone, the last season, I really think she's influencing a lot of women out there with the sort of the Yellowstone Western look coming back. And,
I hadn't seen it on her. Didn't a Mississippi girl play on that one time? Did she not have a role? Did what's her name from Star Mississippi?
Oh, Faith Hill?
Did they do a
1882, which is like, I think that's got to do with another series. She and her husband, Tim McGraw, were on another.
Yeah, the one that was in The Blind Side.
Yes.
Her husband.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's what you're referencing. But the Yellowstone is set in modern times.
Yeah.
And Lainey Wilson has that really.
It's modern times.
Yeah, it's a modern. It's modern.
I just want to watch it because of Kevin Costner, other than that.
Sorry, I guess you won't be watching The Bodyguard anytime soon.
You know, I kind of liked The Bodyguard. I really did.
Or the one about baseball that he was in. He's been in a bunch of really good movies.
When I found out, when he backed Liz Cheney, I kind of lost it with him.
Well, Kevin, if you're listening, Jerry wants.
So I'm sure that'll hurt Kevin's feelings.
I'm sure it will.
But
I think he's more worried about his wife these days. Have you been keeping up with that?
No, I don't keep up with Kevin.
His ex-wife.
That about Liz Cheney, that did me.
Yeah, he's been in a little bit of custody battle and a child support and alimony battle.
Oh, okay. I'm sure he can afford to pay it off.
So. That might have been why he said what he said about Liz Cheney. He was really distracted.
He was giving money to Liz, not his wife.
That could be.
I got you.
Very well could be.
She's not very attractive to me either, by
who?
The way. Liz Cheney.
Kevin Costner's ex is certainly attractive if you're keeping score.
With his bankroll, I'm sure she is.
Yeah, I'm sure she is.
I'm sure she can dress very well.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were talking about fashion, so you don't like Liz Cheney's fashion?
You know, I don't even look at her that close. So she reminds me more of that definitely left wing side. So,
I tell you what, because she's got a famous father.
Yeah.
You know, there's some people out there, and she's one of them. I can't look at her and not picture her father.
What about Angelina Jolie or whatever her name is?
I don't think of old.
Well, then her daddy,
John Vault.
John Vault.
Yeah, I don't think of not Johnny Vault, but John Voight.
No, not Johnny Vault.
I don't see John Voight.
He kind of disowned his daughter.
Well, she kind of got out there a little different.
Kind of a Britney Spears type.
Something like that.
I saw Britney play basketball for a private school in Mississippi. She played for Park Lane Academy, point guard. And I didn't know she was going to turn out like she did.
How was she dressed?
She was dressed in a Park Lane Pioneer, is their nickname. Park Lane Pioneer basketball
uniform. But didn't she cheerlead also for
she
Park Lane?
She cheerleaded for Park Lane.
Because I think I've seen those pictures before.
She sure did.
All right. Well, Jerry, we are fashioned out here. Wasn't that a fun segment?
That was fun. You know, we need to do that again, and I'll do some research.
Oh, you don't need to.
But I should be almost finished monetarily on the fashion end, except for myself. And if I don't lose some weight, I won't be wearing any real gear.
Well, I've got this goal to get you in a bow tie one of these days. Well,
I might do that. Yeah, for the next official rally that we have.
Yeah, we'll have a good Southern rally. Jerry Short, the Takapola Storyteller, always great to talk to you, and we look forward to talking with you again next Tuesday.
That sounds good to me, John. I'll come up with something if you'll throw it at me.
And I know you'll be looking dapper.
Okay.
Until we see you then. Thanks again. We'll be back with more of the Y'all Show right after this.
Candy kisses wrapped in paper mean more to you than any of mine. Candy kisses wrapped in paper, you'd rather have them any old time. You don't mean it when you whisper those sweet love words in my ear. Candy kisses wrapped in paper mean more to you than mine do, dear.
A native of Waverly, Tennessee, born in 1924, the late George Morgan, Grand Ole Opry star, and that was his debut back in 1949, a little Candy Kisses. Enjoy it, and then when I come right back with more talk about candy, I'm going to tell you who George's little daughter is.
Out of dreams, dear, I thought that you were building too. Now my castles all have fallen, and I am left alone, blue. Once my heart was filled.
Okay, give up. George Morgan, who died at only 51 years old back in the 1970s, the father of Laurie Morgan, Grand Ole Opry star. And she got to be a member of the Opry well before she really, in my opinion, deserved to be an Opry member. She only had mild success going back to the early, I guess, the early 80s. She had a few tracks out there. But it wasn't until really right around the time that Keith Whitley died, 1989, when she had Trainwreck of Emotion out on the chart, that she started having real success on the country music charts. And then she, after Keith died, her husband, she really took off with a bunch of big songs. But that was Laurie Morgan's daddy, George Morgan, and Candy Kisses. I'm going to tell you a little bit about candy in a moment. We got a few texts that have come in regarding the conversation we had before the break with our Takapola storyteller, Jerry Short. He and I were talking about fashion and more. We appreciate those of you who've reached out to us on our various texting options of the Y'all Show. Texter says, bow ties look great. And I wear bow ties, by the way, pretty regularly. Texter says, bow ties look great, ... on a six-year-old. Ooh, man, that hurts. Yikes. That hurts bad. Okay, well, I guess it makes me look younger when I wear a bow tie. Thank you for that, though. Appreciate it. And another text coming in when we were talking, Jerry and I, about women's fashion and more. Texter here on the Y'all Show says, got to wear a pearl necklace. Yeah, those are pretty nice. I was looking at some of the prices
on pearl necklaces, and at least on some of the retailers, you can get a good pearl necklace, $200 or more, at some of your national retailers. But there's a place called, what is it called? The Pearl Source. And they got one for over $1,000, an 8.05 millimeter Japanese white pearled necklace. Don't tell your sweetie about that website if you can help it. So we appreciate those of you reaching out to us here about our Takapola Storytellers fashion conversation. You know, I knew something like fashion would be what it would take to get y'all to comment. You know, you're always welcome to comment here on the Y'all Show. You can email us 24/7, mail, M-A-I-L, at y'all.com. And then we have that text line that's available, whether you're catching us live on the radio or if you're getting us in podcast form at your own leisure. You can find us via text at 615-208-4184. Halloween was just a week ago, and you may have a bunch of candy sitting around collecting dust. Delish.com and a writer with that website, Camille Louder, has penned an article called 42 Creative Things to Do with Leftover Halloween Candy. And you can go to that website and check it out, as they've got various things that you can do with all that candy, like putting together pumpkin cheesecake rolls. How about bread pudding is something you can do with your leftover Halloween candy? So many good things to do. But according to the article, one of the absolute favorite things to do with leftover candy is to turn it into desserts and treats for the holidays to come after Halloween. And like I said, we just gave you a few. How about turkey cupcakes or Oreo turkeys that you can do if you've got a bunch of leftover Oreos from Halloween night? I have a hard time believing any of y'all have leftover Oreos. Is that not one of the greatest inventions ever? And how about the fact that you can turn that Oreo easily into a shake or some kind, just mix it in with ice cream, get you a bowl of ice cream. Ooh, I went and picked out on a soft serve ice cream buffet the other day that had the little cut up Oreos. And, you know, vanilla ice cream itself is really good. But if you're an Oreo kind of person, and I bet you are, just add a little bit of that Oreo to it. It's heavenly. You know, and when I go see St. Peter one day, I'm hoping that the pearly gates, they're going to say, hey, boy, come on in here. And while you're at it, we got a soft serve machine right here with plenty of Oreo sprinkle stuff to add to it. Now, that would be heavenly. Maybe not. All right. So, yes, you got Oreos and leftover Oreos. How about you can turn your leftover Halloween candy into gingerbread houses in time for the Christmas season? If you've got leftover candies like Reese's, Twix, Snickers, Butterfinger, you can put them into various desserts like cheesecakes, cookies, brownies. And then, of course, you can do something called the bars, the candy bars, no-brainers for recipes and things like that. If you've got fruity candy left over from Halloween, you can do something with them, turning into a stained glass cookie is what they talk about here. And they've got a recipe there. What is stained glass cookies? Stained glass cookies, holiday cookies that have essentially the fruity thing there in the middle. That's what Delish.com is talking about with stained glass cookies. I encourage you to go to the website Delish.com and find all of these various options. Again, it's our Southern Food for Thought for this day, of how you can turn your leftover Halloween candy into something productive instead of just sitting there getting old and thinking, perhaps I might just pull this out a year from now and use it for Halloween 2024. Nope, put it to use now, y'all, and everybody will be a benefactor of your kind recycling, if you will, of Halloween candy for this year. But I still have a hard time. Many of you have any leftover Halloween candy. Don't bring it by my house. It'll be gone. 42 ways to get rid of your Halloween candy and put it into other recipes. The article at Delish.com. Please go give it a gander. And that will wrap up this Tuesday Y'all Show. We're going to be right back here Wednesday with more Southern Conversation. We'll have a recap of election night as you got these big political races going on today. All that right here on the show that shakes the Southland, the Y'all Show. Have a great rest of your day.